Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and we are so lucky to have on Ron McLean for the second time on this show. Thanks so much, Ron, for taking the time and doing this. How's the year? I don't know what number you're at right now, Ron, but how's it going so far in the covering the NHL?
My beer league, I was just telling you before we started the podcast, Alex, terrible. We haven't won a game, which is, well, we won one, and that was by default. The team that we were to play, the Mad Dogs, couldn't field a team at 11:30 at night earlier in the year. But anyway, we will grow from this, and like the Senators are flying high suddenly, I expect we will be by the holiday season.
Who's your maybe NHL comparable, a player you play like that
Oh
from in
God! If it
years
was baseball
prior?
way before your time, yeah, there was a guy named Rod Hunt. No, Rod's not his first name. Why can't I think of his first name? But he was a Montreal Expo second baseman, and he used to choke up in the bat, crowd the plate, and the pitcher would hit him, and that's how he got on base. So I use that, kind of a diabolical means to score
Okay.
goals. And I played the other day. Eric Lindros had an Easter Seals charity event, and we played two games. And Sean McKenzie was the right winger to my left wing, and in between, Eilish Farfour, who played with the PWHL, Markham Thunder, was back in the Canadian Women's League days. And the other center was Justin Cuthbert, Chris Cuthbert's son. He would be at center. But Sean and I clicked really well together, and he would be a little, I said, Philip Forsberg or Stevie Yzerman. And I guess I'm Zach Hyman. I'm just going to be there. You bank the puck off me and in.
I heard you got two goals, but
That's right.
was it on defense that I heard?
No, they put me back on D after I had the two goals. Like, I'm on Hattie watch, as Sean, I don't know the vernacular, but yeah, I'm in line for a hat trick. And suddenly one of our D went, well, Troy Crowder had to go to the dressing room for some kind of an adjustment. So back to the D I went, and I was quickly trying to do a study. It's been forever since I played defense, but I only thankfully had one shift on D, didn't get scored on, got out of jail and back up to left wing where I felt safe.
Awesome. I want to kind of move to a little bit to obviously the NHL, but I want to ask you a little bit about you because I was talking to your friend and my friend as well, Kyle Bukauskas, and you've been doing this for so long and you always have very creative intros. And he told me that, I guess the challenge is to kind of introduce a big game every Saturday for
That's it.
30 years. And what's that process like for you to generate ideas to have a different take on, another Leafs game on a weekend or a Habs game on Saturday night?
Well, for sure, Alex, it's like a sword of Damocles over my shoulder. And Kyle would tell you it's the same, and you experience the same in your career. Looking for new ways to say the same thing is for sure part of it. It's been 40 years now. I've been doing the NHL. First year was 84. And I turn to muses such as literature and music, the day in history, just trying to connect dots if I see, four cities that have maybe something in common. But you're always looking for, and you want to keep it fresh. Where I'm weak, really weak, is movies and television. I somehow was weaned on TV as a child and have given up watching. Hockey, of course, round the clock, and I watch F1, and I watch golf. But I don't, like, because of my hockey commitments, I don't tend to follow the NFL like most people would. I don't bet, so I don't have that sort of driving force. But it's just the joy of a 45-second story. And the funny thing is, Kyle Bukauskas will often have a similar, wavelength right out of what I do. So we never communicated to one another. So it's sort of an element of surprise that we haven't said exactly the same thing on a given Saturday night. But I just like I always love a story. David Byrne of the Talking Heads wrote a book called How Music Works. And the last line in the book is, I love a good story and I love to stare at the sea. Do I have to choose between the two? So either's good, and a lot of people don't care for that little 45-second story, and a lot of people, it nourishes them to have a story. So, and I'm a big believer in all we are in the end is our story. So there's no question. My bookshelves are filled here. I was late to the party on literature, but modern, especially for whatever reason, female writers like Rebecca Solnit and Miriam Taves out of Winnipeg. Nuala O'Fallon is gone now, but she was an Irish writer. She was a pundit for the Irish Times, but she wrote two memoirs. One is Are You Somebody? And the follow-up Almost There. Extraordinary writer with that gift to find a line that allows you to tell a story in 45 seconds.
I'm curious if, from your perspective, like you're talking about writers and literature, in a sense, do you think that your job as a host, in a sense, is as like a quasi writer to develop themes and is has that been something that you focused on through your 40 years as, on your writing capabilities?
I think what we share is the need to observe. A good host is like a good referee, which I did, as you know, for years and years. And that's it's almost you're cast in the role of you're not seen. You're certainly not trying to steal the show. You're trying to elevate everybody around you. But if your powers of observation are good, then you come with the right question, or you come with the right thread, of a story that will give the guest the story that they should be telling. And that's for me the secret of our position as a host. It's of course to take the back seat, but there's something good about a back seat driver that allows that person at the wheel to shine. And that's where I always looked at even when I started. I don't know if I ever shared this. My first year, 84, I was the host of the Calgary Flames telecast. So Ryan Leslie is cast in that role now. And then 2 years later, I was to Hockey Night in Canada. But my first year doing the Flames, 84, we had 11 college players, which was unheard of back in 1984. It's
Oh,
very common now to have that. But I had Jim Poplinski, was kind of he wasn't a college guy, but he was kind of the leader, and Lanny McDonald. But after that, we had Eddie Beers from University of Denver, Kerry Wilson, Dartmouth, Colin Patterson, Clarkson, Mike Eaves, Wisconsin, Jamie McCowan, Ohio State, Steve Bozak, Northern Michigan, Gino Cavallini, Bowling Green, Joel Otto, Bemidji State, Neil Sheehy, Harvard, Perry Barazan, North Dakota, and Charlie Bourgeois from the University of Moncton. What that meant was I had all these folks who had sort of been raised in an academic setting who were
Huh.
just waiting for that question, waiting for that challenge, that debate, which is rare. Most players, back especially in 84, would cocoon and wanted no part of anything that would go public. But a person that's coming out of a university scene is used to that sharing. So it was a really lucky break for me, and it kind of gave me that challenge to study what they studied, to learn what made them tick, and some were socioeconomic, some were politicos. But as soon as I could kind of get to that kernel, I'd see their eyes light, oh, it's funny enough, I studied that, and away they go. So that's all. It was just using what you had at your disposal to make an interview shine.
Is that something now, like obviously as a host, where is it trying to get to know players around the league, or is it just even your host? Like, what does that look like now?
Well, unfortunately, Alex, my role's changed a ton. I miss the interviews for sure. I even in the day when there was still a union in hockey, it's been broken since 2005. But the challenge of interviewing the commissioner and going at him on labor negotiations and studying, and my guy was Rod Fort. He was at Pullman University, and then he transferred to Michigan. But he wrote lots of great books on the economics of sport. Pay dirt, probably the biggest one, but sports economics was one by him, and I would study that, and just be so involved in that conversation with the idea of protecting the union, of players' rights. My belief, I know parity's been great for the league, and it saves all our, Ottawas and Calgaries of the world, so I can't complain. But the flip of that is it can save an Arizona for the longest time, and that drags down revenues. And you know who pays for that? The player. The player whose union used to protect them can't anymore. There's a payback system. So I loved, and I don't get to do too many interviews anymore. So, but you have Kevin Bieksa and Jennifer Botterill and Kelly Rudy and Elliot. So I'm always trying to probe with them, and that's the joy. And then since I don't do interviews, then now I have to write a 45-second little story to kind of feel like I contributed to the night.
I'm curious. I was doing a bit of research on you, and you said on a podcast recently about how you got nervous, like when you're, I think it was you're 18 years old in Red Deer, and I think you were selling, I forget if it was
Stereos. Yep.
stereos.
It was a stereo shop. Oh God, it was a this is a panic attacks, which I suffered from the time I was 16 until the time I was 35. So I went through 20 years of just hell. And when I hear of my colleagues who may have children who are going through very typical, fight or flight response, a panic attack when you're 17 or 18 years old and feeling kind of alone in the world, I don't want to tell them that I took me 20 years to kick it. But I didn't have the professional help that might have ended it sooner for me. I had to learn all the triggers. Some of them are simple triggers that have to do with your health, nutrition, alcohol, caffeine, things like that can beat you up and leave you vulnerable. But the biggest culprit I feel was just this obsession with self. You know, until I could get out of myself and into truly being of service and truly understanding why I was actually in the role, was to make someone else look good. I mean, and my boss Wayne Berry at the very beginning tried to teach me that, Ron, if you let the guest shine, let the guest be the star, you will shine by extension. I knew that, and I wanted that. I mean, I was an only child, so I knew the importance of friendships. But I still suffered, you know, this ego that made me worry about how I was sounding or appearing, and drove me to sometimes feel like I was ill prepared. And when I had that feeling, next thing you know, I have a fight or flight panic attack. Heart goes racing 1,000 miles an hour. And yeah, I dealt with it throughout. And in that one situation that you obviously heard about, I was at a stereo shop, and the broadcaster at the main station sent it up to the North Hill, it would have been in Red Deer. Now let's go to Stereo Shop and Ron McLean. And I felt the attack coming on, and I started my little dissertation about stereos being on sale. And I got to maybe the 15-second mark, and that was it. I couldn't talk. I had no breath left, and I just stood there frozen. And it was radio, so nobody saw this except for the store owner was kind of looking at me thinking, what the hell is going on here? And I heard the announcer back at the main station, CKRD, saying, Ron, are you? Oh, we seem to have lost Ron. Ron, are you there? And I couldn't talk. It was really crazy. And then I realized I had like 15 minutes till the next time I was supposed to go on. And in those 15 minutes, somehow I had to gut it out and get through a 60-second live commercial, or my career was over. And that, I somehow got through that next one. I felt the whole thing start again, but I just kept going this time. So that's an important lesson if you're listening. I'm no expert, no clinical advice
No.
here, but I found that you know, if you do carry on if as best you can, it will subside. But easy thing to say for anyone who's going through them or has gone through them, you know, it's a difficult one to kick, but you will kick it one way or the other. Hope it comes to you sooner than me.
Is that something now where you've done it so long that it feels like you're in your backyard or you're in your house or in your living room?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think you lose that ambition. You understand that climbing is learning, as Chris Hadfield, the astronaut, would say, not you know, getting a promotion, more likes, dislikes, whatever. Yeah, I've graduated to a place in life where, you know, not to be complacent by any stretch. I still feel that the show is an important show, and the platform is extremely important, so that you want to provide you know. There was a lawyer named Bryan Stevenson wrote a book called Just Mercy, and he was down representing prisoners on death row in the southern states. It was kind of a non-for-profit legal organization, so all these folks who couldn't afford lawyers, they would come in and represent. And there was a mom of a guy convicted on death row who said to Bryan Stevenson, "Bryan, you know you have people who are loved in your care." And I always kind of thought, you know, not to be grandiose about it, but I just feel like when you're on Hockey Night in Canada, you have people who are loved in your care. And I think, you know, I see the way Connor McDavid operates, and I see he recognizes that at a young age, you know, and I see Sidney Crosby has that, you know, and Gretzky certainly had that. You have a kind of a duty to often go against what is, you know, in the public interest. You know, it may not be the majority's opinion, but if you feel strongly that it's right for the majority, you have to bowl ahead with that point of view.
The only thing I can't see you doing is, I'm sure you've seen the Amazon clip and of Connor McDavid yelling at his team. I don't see you doing that
No.
to anyone at Sportsnet, but
No, that was a, and I think it took Connor time to recover from that. I think he got off to a shaky start this season, and I think he was, you know, I'm sure that was really difficult for him to see go public, and it shouldn't have, in my opinion. That's a tough conversation, because, but I just think, you know, Gordon Lightfoot wrote the classic, "If you could read my mind," and now it's on Twitter, well, X. You know, I just feel like there's been a pulling back of certain curtains that's almost unfair to the human existence. We need to be allowed our warts, our foibles, and when those are sort of trotted out, like I don't think it would have been so bad if it was just out there once, but it won't be just once. Same with their reaction in the dressing room, the devastation, that Paul Simon from Graceland, when you lose something, it's like a window on your heart. Everybody knows you've been blown apart. And to see that, angst and to kind of have this voyeuristic opportunity bugs me. I don't know why. It just it feels like, and it always just felt like, it's kind of like a person, naked, not much, but with the right protection clothing, i.e. They then become special. So I it's too bad. And I think it did kind of hurt him to see that.
I'm curious, like maybe from your perspective of kind of, as you said, like being not kind of giving the privacy to players, but it seems as though people kind of from the other perspective would say like, hey, like this is growing our game. This is getting eyeballs. This is making hockey more of a worldwide sport. Like what would, I'm not saying that's my
No,
opinion,
no,
but
no.
I'm curious.
I like because I just think you can't, if that were the case, right? Well, let's have nudity. Let's have more fighting. Let's have whatever's going to grow the game. It's easy to, have the Colosseum in Rome filled to see the Christians thrown to the lions. That'll sell. So, but can't be that. We can't be doing things that are unscrupulous. Sport in itself has to have virtue in order to be worth anything. I mean, there's who cares who wins? You care who cares, and it's that's the moral of sport. Are you a good teammate? You can't all be the MVP, but you can be the best teammate, and that, believe me, is the point of it all. So, yeah, I just feel like in this excitement or rush, it started with F1 drives. Like I don't enjoy that show. That what happened? How I got hooked on Formula One car racing during the pandemic. Colby Armstrong was interviewing Sidney Crosby, his friend. What are you doing? He says, well, like everybody else, I'm watching TV. What else is there? He says, yeah, what are you watching? He says, I'm watching Yellowstone and I'm watching F1 Drive to Survive. And I thought, well, I don't really. Carrie, my wife, had loved Yellowstone. So that was a good recommendation. And she thought, well, if he's good on that, he's good on F1 Drive to Survive. So on it went. And I started to watch that series and I do watch it, but I don't enjoy it. Again, I find it like way too, probing or peering or just bugs me. It's a camera shouldn't be there. But I love the show when I tune in Sky Sports and I watch them execute a broadcast. I just think they're phenomenal. And they have multiple crews. It's not just, the same set group together each week. But they both the combination of the biggest thing they have, Alex, if I always say to Rob Corte or Ed Hall or my bosses, anybody who would listen. Greg Sansone, if I could just have that board that they have, it's a video screen where they can stop and start the clip themselves. That's everything to a story is the ability to stop and well, whereas we, and this is no offense to Heather or Brian or any of our producers, directors, but when it starts to go three steps along the way, I say hold it right there, and then somebody has to tell somebody else to hold it right there, and it just kills the story, because it, or at least the timing or the music of the story. Maybe that's the best way to put it. Yeah, just I like it to roll. And those guys do an exceptional job with F1 car racing coverage.
How would you how do you feel as though your job, as host has kind of changed over the past couple of years? You talk about how the NHL is maybe selling in a different way. How do you feel with Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada?
No, I don't think it could have changed. I think you have to be, it's one-on-one communication, always will have been, that was the greatest lesson, and I've told you that before. So the nuts and bolts of what I do is it's me and you, the viewer, you, the listener, you, the reader, and I'm going to share my story, which often is a story about you. So that just it stops right there. The red light goes on, and then it's a portal between you and whoever's watching. And everything else, if I'm doing the Olympics or I'm doing the Calgary Stampede or I'm doing the Stanley Cup or I'm doing Jim Cuddy and Greg Keeler going into the Songwriters Hall of Fame or on and on, it's all the same. It's all at core, how are you going to reach that one person, the one person to whom you're speaking, and everything else is immaterial.
What now, like when you look at the NHL, like how do you prepare for these shows? Is it are you what I guess I'm curious, like is
Yep,
it you watch
I sit
every
each
game?
night, and I haven't got my, well, I guess I do. So as an example, here's just a coincidence. This was the last thing I wrote down because I was kind of in and out of the Leaf game last night. But you can see at the top, it's got HHOF. That's the Hall of Fame night. So 2 nights ago, the Hall of Fame induction took place. And Lanny McDonald mentioned Denise and Sherry and a police officer named Jose. They're the three people who saved his life when he had a cardiac event at Calgary Airport upon returning from the Hall of Fame the previous year. And so I made that note, okay, Denise and Sherry and Jose, I've got to get all three or two or one, hopefully. And I'm kind of screwing it up by telling you this story, but because I was going to keep it a secret from Lanny. I didn't want Lanny to know I'm thinking this way.
Okay.
But when we do Scotiabank Hockey Day in Canada in Canmore, which is right beside where he lives, outside Springbank, just outside Calgary, it would be so lovely to have any of those three join us on the broadcast to say, you know, thank you for saving Lanny McDonald's life because he was a hero to me and so many more. And yeah, when he just happened to make it a point to thank them, I wrote that down. And then the day or the page before will be when Manchester won call. Oh, this is the note about Paul Bissonnette's on this weekend. So he played with a guy named Jordan Weal who's playing overseas, but Colin Miller, he played with when Manchester won the AHL Calder Cup. Colin Miller, the defenseman for the Jets, was on the Manchester team, and he was the third scorer. So I'll ask Biz before we go on air. But yeah, you're just forever making notes all week long, listening to different shows that you know I have to do. Bob Stauffer has a show in Edmonton Thursday night, so I'll go on that. So I'll listen to one or two interviews he did. You're just constantly preparing, and that's the joy of the gig. You know, the learning, as I said, ambition isn't climbing; it's learning.
I guess with, you mentioned the Hockey Hall of Fame, and I won't really get into that, but I think right like present day, there's so many players that obviously will be in the Hall of Fame, but are kind of the stars of today and tomorrow's NHL. And I'm curious, like we talked about McDavid, but before, but I'd want to ask a little bit more about him. Like you've watched Mario, you've watched Gretzky. Where does right now McDavid rank, and maybe the players that you've watched over the years?
Well, I put him closer to Bobby Orr, who, ironically, his agency represents Connor, but just because Bobby was, you know, four or fifth gear ahead of the rest of the players in the game at the same time. And that's, I realize there's a few guys, MacKinnon can really motor. So Connor, I think, is faster, but it's close. And MacKinnon can stick handle with his speed the way Connor does. I would say Connor's vision is closer to the Crosby Gretzky vision or Lemieux, but you know he is definitely as special as anything I've ever witnessed. But I mean Gretzky excited me because of his imagination, because of his vision. You were just shocked at what he saw and could create. Connor last night, as an example, we're obviously a podcast, so this will be seen at different junctures, but in the game that Connor just played, he had a 3 point, his 4 points
Yeah,
maybe,
4 points.
four
Yeah.
points, right? So it was the first goal though was the typical power play where he does a little jitterbug and then he fake shot and then he no look passes across to Draisaitl. It was at the very start of the second period on fresh ice, and he took a little off the pass because it's fresh ice. I was just astounded at all these different and Luke Gazdik actually played with him. He said, yeah, he said he processes every player on the ice, where they are, what direction their skates are facing, ice conditions. Wayne Gretzky told me that his son-in-law, Dustin Johnson, the great golfer, he said he's literally a savant when it comes to gardening. He can tell you what the soil is made of. He can tell you what the roots of the grass is like so that he knows that, you know, when he takes his divot, there will be a certain catch with a certain grass. All kinds of things about the composition of the greens, the fairways. That is, you know, he said it's supernatural, and that's McDavid in every way. And then I, as I say, I love his personality. I loved him after the Humboldt Bronco bus crash. I just remember, his way of communicating that grief was special. He went obviously out to Humboldt and helped out where he could. And I really like his heart. I like his Draisaitl was commenting before the game yesterday about how he doesn't make himself the show. I do love that humility. You know, I think that's probably small town Canadian kid thing. He's Newmarket, I'm Red Deer, but I appreciate when I see it. So it's going to be great to watch him the back half of a amazing career.
From McDavid to another great player in Alexander Ovechkin, who's obviously probably gonna, well, definitely will beat Wayne Gretzky's record for goals, but we'll see if it's this year. It looks pretty promising at this point. I guess just maybe talk about, did you ever think that record would be broken, even maybe a decade and now, in terms of Gretzky's?
Kind of, I did. And the reason I say that is because I don't think of, and lots of his teammates have said the same thing. You know, we don't think of Wayne as a goal scorer. We think of him as the 2,500 points and, 215 in a season. But he, and I know he got 92 goals in 1 year, but he was always the playmaker. If the record is going to belong to anybody, it should belong to Ovechkin. He is a pure goal scorer. I remember Ilya Kovalchuk, he had the same shot. Just a howitzer as well, but nowhere near the compete level of OV. So, just going to be nice to see him get it. And as I say, he deserves it. He, for me, is the best pure goal scorer ever.
You had an interesting comparison to maybe Ovechkin and Crosby in terms of them being similar to Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, kind of paving the way for maybe the McDavid, maybe even the Bedard. Like, what do you think those two have kind of done in terms of Ovechkin and Crosby to maybe take the NHL to the next forward?
Well, first they pulled him out of the lockout, so we lose an entire year of hockey, and there might have been some angst, but as Senator David Adams Richards from Miramichi, New Brunswick, always said, no matter what they do to the game, we get used to it. They sort of saved the day coming out of the lockout, because it was, now we get to see these two, stars head to head, and it's kind of like, I don't know if Celebrini and Bedard will morph into this, but maybe. But for sure, Gretzky and Lemieux were that back in my early career. And then, as you say, the NBA was completely messed up. Their games were being tape delayed on run on CBS at 11:30 at night, and then it started with Bird and Magic Johnson, and eventually Jordan becomes the third part of a trident of a show that you just can't miss. And Tiger did it for the PGA Golf Tour. Every so often, one of these great athletes comes along. And tennis was lucky, since you know tennis, obviously Nadal and Federer. That was a great rivalry. But there was three to that mix with obviously the guy I like, Djokovic. And he's not, I don't think, the choice of too many. But I like Djokovic. And again, I like him for his. He was good after a Wimbledon win, when he just said he liked it because there's no, disco balls and no fancy sound effects. It's just an homage to the great game. And I'm kind of old school that way, unfortunately.
I want to transition a little bit to some Canadian teams, if that's okay. And before we were recording this episode, you mentioned to me maybe your Steve Staios kind of story. So I just wanted you to kind of maybe talk a bit about the Sens, but also your knowledge of the GM of the Ottawa Senators.
So Steyos is my next door neighbor almost. He's selling just down the street here where we live in Oakville, would be considered eastern part of the town. And Steve and Susanna are just below us, I'd say about 10 houses. And they're selling that place, but they have a place downtown Oakville. So they will continue to keep their Oakville residence. And of course, he's now got to be in Ottawa. But he's a great guy. He has a bull terrier. Oh, yeah, a bulldog, rather, named Rocky. And Rocky and Steve will often be, or Susanna will be, in Lawson Park, which is nearby, and I'll be there with my standard schnauzer Jackson. And then if it's Steve, we get talking hockey, and it's just, a gift. He was always incredible to listen to. Not a gossip at all, ever. Just more he really has a great idea about, lessons from the game, and thoughts about, the right way to play the game. And yeah, he's just a joy to be around. So I'm so happy that they seem to be already, turning it around. He's only been there a year. But Landauer and him and Travis Green, all men I greatly respect. But the personal connection is with Steve. See him at the fitness center, see Susanna at the fitness center. We go to the same gym. Just an impressive guy. He loves his sushi. What else can I tell you
Okay.
about him? He's yeah. The dog is the wins the show though. Just a fantastic bulldog. Not big. He's like his dad. He got a big head. He's got a big head and a big heart, but he's not a big bulldog by comparison.
How much maybe just seeing what the team has looked like so far this season. Obviously a bit up and down, but they just beat the Leafs in a really resounding fashion.
Yeah, the game for me that stood out was the New York game when Shesterkin single-handedly won that game for the Rangers, and I've seen them, rising to the occasion against big teams. It's a really good sign. They were they just, we keep waiting on Stützle and Tkachuk and Norris. Is now healthy and Batherson. I mean, they're all talents. I love Batherson's backhand passing. I put that up with Bobby Orr or some of my favorites. Mario Lemieux was the greatest, probably backhand passer. Paul Kariya, but Batherson—that's one of his little sneaky. It's like Datsyuk just went into the hall. He played the game on the backhand. So that's a skill set. Defense, really love their defense. So and Ullmark, that's just a smart acquisition to go out and get. I mean, Kastelic's been great in Boston, so good for him. That's nice to see. Pat Stapleton's grandson. But yeah, they've done a great job of tactics with Travis, and we all saw that talent, and we were kind of waiting for that, that sort of aha moment or James Joycey epiphany, and it seems to have happened.
I want to go maybe transition to the team they beat last night, just in the Toronto Maple Leafs. It feels like obviously new coach. It feels like a bit of a new era, but at the same time, it feels like it's the same old with this team. Just how would you assess this team so far this season, and maybe their prospects going hopefully into the playoffs?
Well, again, like the Sens got Ullmark, Stolarz. You could go with the three guys they picked up from the Florida Panthers. Lorenz has been a fantastic fourth line acquisition for them. So they're and Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Chris Tanev have really, really helped their defense to improve. So I think the combination of accountability with Berube, his experience as a winner, the captaincy thing was probably the right thing to do. It's hard on JT, John Tavares, but I do believe Matthews was your captain. I always felt, Alex, when Babcock years ago flew to Phoenix to meet with Austin after the season because there was some talk that maybe he was unhappy with his ice time. I think the rest of the guys in the room would look at that and say, wow, the coach is kind of afraid of Matthews. So I think they would respect that Austin is the leader. And John is the kind of guy that will always be your leader, with or without a C. So it wouldn't. Begrudge he wouldn't begrudge that decision one bit. So that those are all things I think have helped Toronto. I think I'm glad they didn't do anything hasty. It's like Detroit in the day with Yzerman was they were very tempted when he was 31 years old. Scotty Bowman was always kind of in Ken Holland's office. Are you sure we could get something for him? And Ken was no, we need Yzerman. And was he ever right? And I think Marner kind of fits into that category.
I guess what do you think that, I mean, obviously it's really early in the season, but do you think they have with Berube, with Tanev, Ekman-Larsson, that they're built better for the playoffs than maybe years prior?
Yes, I think that a defensive improvement, and like Stolarz is a or Wohl. I mean, I've never really had the chance to see Wohl play enough, but whenever he's played, I'm very impressed with him as well. So, I think goaltending. It's funny, you can like we were everybody's talking about the Four Nations Cup and who's Canada going to put in net, and there's a bit of a panic going on, understandably. But you look back at the last decade of Stanley Cups, Stuart Skinner missed by a goal last year, but certainly Vegas won with Aiden Hill, Colorado won with Darcy Kemper, Washington with Braden Holtby, St. Louis with Jordan Binnington, Matt Murray won back-to-back with the Pittsburgh, Carey Price got to within a, he got him to the final. So all Canadian goaltenders is my point on that. And yet, a goalie can win it for you. So you can win without. I don't think any of those goalies I mentioned really were considered superstars. We lost the Olympics in Nagano in '98 with Patrick Roy playing every game. He was the best goalie of his time. We didn't win that one. Whereas Roberto Luongo came on in relief in Vancouver and won, and Marty Brodeur came on in relief in '06, sorry, '02, and won. So yeah, goaltending is a. Many people have said this cliche that the game ought to be called goaltending. And I do agree with that, but I also think you can just win with good goaltending. And Ken Holland was sort of, he had Hasek as a superstar, Vernon, I wouldn't call a superstar, but he's a Hall of Famer. And Chris Osgood. Osgood would fit into the, for me, very much like a Binnington. Great goalie, but not a superstar. So anyway, the Leafs have two good ones, and that's I think, it's been a I think a really pleasant surprise this year early on, the Florida guys.
I might transition from, one team with good goaltendings to maybe the best goaltender in the world and the Winnipeg Jets, Connor Hellebuyck. And obviously they've just been flying, no pun intended, to their
Yeah.
namesake. Just how good is Do you, like when you think back of maybe the last decade of goaltenders, like where does Hellebuyck rank? And maybe later talk about the Jets' surprising 15-1 in the O record.
Yeah, I love Connor Hellebuyck. He's again, he's kind of the McDavid of goaltenders. He reads the game better than any goalie in the game. He reads things like skate position, location. He helps his defense to get into a position that helps him to make a save. Very technical, extremely technical in the position. So, and I love to see him come out there, not last game, but the one before, and he did a great, you probably saw it, the Selly, as he was named the first star on Saturday. Yeah, just, his personality has emerged. I can remember in his first year or two, he would be apologizing for a bad performance, and he was kind of his own worst critic. And those days are gone. Like if a reporter kind of challenges him now, he bristles right back. And I think Stuart Skinner is learning that technique in Edmonton, which will be, you got to have that thick skin in that position. So yeah, he's great. Connor, Kyle Connor, he's just that amazingly consistent sniper. And I think their system, systems can win. Dallas's system is what they're using, and so that's Jimmy Neal brought it really from Detroit, and Rick Bowness, when he came over from Dallas, he brought it to the Jets, and Scott Arneil knows it cold. And they're, and the other thing, Alex, and it's early, but they are winning these, games that we thought, aha, this will be when we see the real Winnipeg Jets, and they're just starting to bulldoze the big guns now. So, but I think the familiarity has been a real asset to them. They know each other. That team's the same team as last year. You can see them zip that puck around with that knowing that comes with familiarity. It's like the Finns and the Olympics or the World Championships. Usually it's the same 22, 23 guys comprise the roster. So get out of the way for Finland at the start of the tournament. They'll be ahead of the rest of the pack. And then all the others start to get used to one another and may play well enough to beat the Finns because they're still formidable. But yeah, Winnipeg's a joy. And they, Kevin Cheveldayoff, the decision to sign Hellebuyck and Scheifele. Josh Morrissey, can't say enough about him back there. And then they've added Spit. Logan Stanley's 6'8". He's, Tyler Myers kind of guy that can add some brawn, and Sandberg plays big and tough. So they're no pushover in their own end because Pionk and Morrissey aren't big. Just everything. They have it all.
Do you think they are legitimate cup contenders?
For sure I do. Yeah, for sure. Everybody thought last year, Alex, that they were a threat to win it because of their structure. They really, and I don't understand it. That would be a Kevin Bieksa question, but people say their structure is second. It's a funny story. Scott Arneil, I saw him before the season. He said when Rick Bowness was doing Hockey Night in Canada last spring, I text him on two fronts. First, I text him and tell him to look at the camera. He kept looking down, waiting for his clip to arrive. And who could blame him for that? And then he said, but the other thing is, Rick was coming dangerously close to giving away our secrets. He said, we use the Dallas system, which Rick brought over, but we can't be saying that on Hockey Night in Canada. So I don't know what it is, but what it is working. And they just did it to Dallas. So neat to see.
Maybe just from one team that's been so effective to start the year, maybe to the Montreal Canadiens, it's been a really tough
Yes.
start to the season. What do you think is kind of going wrong in Montreal so far?
It's probably a case of like they do have David Savard, but it's probably a case of their best players are too young. I just you saw it in Ottawa. You bring in Claude Giroux, you bring in guys like that. And that's Montreal's problem right now, is that if you're gonna, move somebody, you might think about moving. I wouldn't move a David Savard. You need a little more of no nothing against Nick Suzuki. I think the world of Nick. He's clutch, but he's young. When Edmonton was trying to do it with Jordan Eberle and Taylor Hall and Nail Yakupov, and they rolled over these number one picks, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, but they were all kids. And I don't think you can't win, as the Penguins are finding out, when you go past a certain age. But you, I mean, or I think you can't. But I think there's a sweet spot, and it's probably as simple as Montreal's just not there yet. They're best players. They've got Gallagher and Savard to lead, but they just don't have enough of that, in my opinion, right now.
Obviously, last year the Oilers, as you mentioned, were one goal away from winning the Stanley Cup, or I guess you could say two, but they were right there. Obviously, Game Seven and the crazy comeback. How much fun was that for you, just
Oh
to
God. It
finally
was
have a team? Yeah.
it was incredible. And the funniest part was we had an Air Canada charter with NHL executives, referees, ESPN, and we HockeyNet in Canada people on one Air Canada charter. And then the Edmonton Oilers had the exact same Air Canada plane, a 767, and it couldn't get from Fort Lauderdale to Edmonton without refueling in Kansas City, and neither could we. So the two planes would be on the tarmac together in Kansas City, and I could peer out my little window of my 767, and in the rain covered window, there's Connor McDavid through the rain covered window of his plane, and dragging Florida back and forth, as he would say. It was a really great the vibe in Edmonton, as you could imagine. We had probably five or six dinners in the city, and everything was blue and orange. And I mean, the change in spectators through the years, back in the 80s, fans were kind of on the edge of their seats and they were quiet. I mean, they would cheer, but now it's like a masquerade. It's everybody's in costume, and it's noise from almost like a Nashville or a Vegas experience. So that was wild, and it was a very good series. And you know how good Florida is. So to come within a goal, it was a funny game. I don't know how you saw it, Alex, but I just felt like it was a game of bounces that, finally maybe Edmonton got a little tired. It's hard to imagine you get tired, but those days off between games, those 2 days off, and you've come off a high winning, and I think it's hard to get it back. And it just looked like one of those, like I've seen it in World Juniors especially. You beat the Americans in the semi and then you lose to Russia because you just can't, encore performance is the hardest. That's right.
Exactly. I guess maybe with that, before I let you go, and I have one final fun question for you, but how close do you think a Canadian team is to winning the cup this year, or even in like the next 2 or 3 years?
I don't see anybody that's unbeatable. The Colorado in their year was to me unbeatable. Landeskog back, added to MacKinnon and Makar, unbeatable. Vegas is very good. Rangers are very good, and Florida's very good. For me, those Dallas is interesting because I would never disparage Jamie Benn or Tyler Seguin, or but are they on the cusp of going over? People say, "What about you, Ron?" True, but they might be getting just in that position where they're not in the perfect window, but their kids are good. So, but I somehow like. I like Vegas, Rangers, and Florida right now. But I could see Winnipeg, Vancouver, Edmonton, Toronto. I could see, and God, Calgary. I mean, I can't see them winning, but they're really good. They would be the kind of team you wouldn't want to play in a one series, right? You could lose to Calgary for sure in a series. But yeah, no, the Canadian teams are positioned that they're competitive. They all have a shot, and it just feels like maybe the Winnipeg's going to win this Grey Cup and the Stanley Cup. Maybe this is
Oh
the
my
year
God.
for the center of country.
That'd be great. As all my family's in Winnipeg, I would definitely
Oh,
be
good.
all aboard for that. And my cousin works for the Jets as well, so definitely would appreciate that. My kind of tweak is I keep looking at the standings, and I'm like, I see a little sliver of Leafs Sens first round. I can see the points percentage going there, and
Good.
I wouldn't complain about that, and I'm sure our bosses went as well, so I'm hoping there's a little bit kind of like the Battle of Alberta a couple of years
Yeah.
ago. Obviously, Edmonton and Vancouver last year. Like, I just hope there's Canadian versus Canadian.
One of my favorite all-time memories in hockey is Toronto played Vancouver in '94 in the third round. And Vancouver made short order, 5 games it took, and they won in triple overtime, or maybe double. Greg Adams scored to win it for the Canucks. And when the goal went in on Felix Potvin, the Toronto goalie, just kind of crumpled back in his net. And Jamie McCowan, the defender for Toronto, stood over him. Like the guy, the rink attendant came out and pushed the net off, and the place was going bonkers. And Jamie McCowan just stood over Felix, you know, "Are you okay, kid?" And I just loved it. He had won a cup in Calgary, McCowan. He would go on to win a cup in Detroit. And it's a snapshot of back to what I was saying to you earlier about what is hockey? You know, it's not winning. It's that. It was that moment of Jamie McCowan doing that for Felix Potvin that, and that was probably the biggest hype, you know, ratings wise. Obviously, when a team makes the final, it's bigger, like Edmonton last year. But it was a third round Canadian, all Canadian clash, and that's a good thing when you get that.
Can you explain to me how those two teams played each other in the third round as someone who wasn't alive at that time? Like, why were the alignments that way?
That's a good question. It's definitely an East-West. I don't know if that's the first time that they l crossed over, but I'm guessing they just, you know, happened to. That's a good question. I
Isn't it the
honestly don't.
Patrick Division and like
They were
the.
certainly, yeah, Smythe, Norris. Yeah,
Yes.
they were divisions that were named. And we didn't have the same seeding system as we do now. But yeah, it's a good question.
Well,
I don't remember.
if I stumped you, I feel like I've accomplished something today, Rons, because you
That's
know
good.
almost
Yes.
everything about the NHL
No,
and the history. So
know
I appreciate it. The kind of fun question I'll leave you be. And thanks again so much for taking so much of your time on a Wednesday to come on this show. But I guess if one day Gary Bettman retires and cedes you the opportunity to become the next commissioner of the NHL for one day, what would the rule change be that you'd kind of enforce in the NHL?
Well, I would get rid of the trapezoid. I would let the goalies go back and play the puck. It's the only one I quarrel with a little bit. I'm not a huge replay guy. You know, these offside replays are. I'm ready to start a, you know, a conga line to protest that too. But the one I really hate is the they can only play the puck in the trapezoid. I love goalies playing the puck, and I love the chaos that ensues. So yeah. That it's a small detail, and like I said to you earlier in the show, no matter what we do to the game, you know, we get used to it, and after that, it's just up to these amazing, you know, the speed of the game could be dangerous, but it's unbelievable to see the speed of the game right now, and to have the hands to go with it, wow, just crazy. It's all they're a bunch of fighter pilots. That's what they are.
Exactly. Do you know what goaltender interference is,
Yeah, well, I don't. Yeah, and I can and replay hasn't helped me to
Oh.
understand that. So there's two things I don't know. I don't know how Toronto met Vancouver in the third round in '94, and I don't know what goaltender interference is. At least
Exactly.
on the latter, we're in unison. We're all in lockstep.
Awesome, Ron. Is there anything you want to kind of share about?
No, I told you, I think before the show, I can't remember this before, but yes, Tara Sloan, I saw my colleague on Hometown Hockey. I saw your show with her, and I was telling you I was prepping for a Tragically Hip event at the Massey Hall and watched it stem to stern and thoroughly enjoyed that chat that you had. And keep up the great work, is what I would say,
Well,
Alex. Yeah.
thank you so much, Ron. As someone that, idolized you growing up, just to have you on the show twice somehow.
Yeah, anytime.
I don't know what I've done, but I really
It's the
appreciate
Kyle Bukauskas. It's
it.
Scoop Bukauskas. He's busy now with his own 32
I
thoughts,
know,
so
I
they have
know.
to come to me.
The hair says it all. The hair says
Yeah.
it all. But
Yeah.
thanks so much, Ron. I really appreciate it, and we'll definitely do this another time.
Cheers, Alex.